Welcome to The Trail Ahead, conversations at the intersection of race, environment, history, and culture. We're your hosts, Addie and Faith.
We bring on folks from all walks of life to have real, authentic, messy dialogue that can lead to tangible change.
Running, it brings me so much joy, even when I can't do it, even when I'm injured. I'm like, I just can't wait for the day where I can go get 20-minute run-in and like my brain will be cleansed, all will be healed. I, you know, won't have touched a piece of technology for however many minutes. And God, I just love running. If anyone needs running hype, hit me up. I'm your girl. You too can love running.
Our guest this week is Claire Gallagher. She's a trail runner and environmental advocate, and she became a good friend over the past few years. I first met Claire at a trail race called CCC back in 2017, a race she ended up winning casually. Despite having vastly different finishing times, I'll leave it at that, she and I have stayed in touch ever since. It's been so great to watch her step into the role of athlete activist over the last few years.
In this episode, we get into some super real conversations, which we're able to do based on how well we know each other. We talk about the true costs of running, since people always say things like, running is free. We talk about group dynamics and trying to find a running community. We talk about whiteness, advocacy, finding your voice, and being an imperfect advocate. We hope you enjoy this one as much as we did.
My name is Claire Gallagher. I'm a professional trail runner and environmental advocate. I work for Patagonia as a global sports activist, and I live in Boulder, Colorado.
When did you run your first ultra marathon? Did you run a marathon first? Like, how did you find your path to doing this?
I mean, I think the bottom line for me is that I just love running. I ran in high school, ran in college in New Jersey, and then after graduating, I moved to Southern Thailand to teach English for a couple years. That is where I ran my first ultra marathon. It's honestly a very atypical way to get into elite ultra marathon racing, which, yeah, it's not that big of a sport yet, but it is growing in popularity. And you see more people these days with my background, which is collegiate track. So like I ran the 5K, I ran the steeplechase, which is 3,000 meters, a little less than 2 miles on the track. So I got quite burned out at Princeton. I mean, I ran all 4 years, but I struggled with injuries, motivation, and other priorities. And so when I moved to Thailand, I kind of thought, oh, you know, this is when I let go of running. This is when I start to get a healthier relationship with something else. And I happened to move to an extremely remote fishing village a couple hours north of Phuket. And I had a lot of free time on my hands when I wasn't teaching. And what did I end up doing? Running. And it just was one of those things. I was like ready to give up this thing that had dictated so much of my life. Like my identity has always been distance runner. And when I was basically put in a vacuum, like I didn't really have friends. I had a few like English teacher friends, but I didn't speak Thai. Like I was sort of bumbling my way through this beautiful, amazing place. And I decided the way I want to explore this is on foot. So I would spend weekends, if I wasn't like traveling to other parts of Thailand or something, going on like 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 hour runs, and I would build up. And I was doing this like without a coach, without a guidebook. Sometimes when I had really good Wi-Fi, I would try and like screenshot pages of this amazing book. Highly recommend. It's by a fellow Patagonia ambassador, Chrissy Mail, and it's called Running Your First Ultra. And I would like try and screenshot like pages out of this book to be like, what should I do? Because I wanted to train for a race I signed up for in Northern Thailand, and it was a 80 kilometer race, so 50 miles. And yeah, so I had come from never running a road marathon, never running even a half marathon. And I was like, I'm going to just go for it and run this 50 mile race in these, like basically the jungle with a lot of poisonous snakes. I luckily didn't get bit. And I just, I mean, I'm obsessed with running. Like, I can't hide it. Like, if anything, I mean, it's been 7 years since that race. I did that race in 2014. And I am still as obsessed with running. It's heartbreaking. It's amazing. It's also not the point to life. Like, I've developed this, I think, a really healthy relationship with the sport. Like, this sport has absolutely annihilated me. The activity itself, like, I've been extremely injured from it. I've, like, had heartbreak from it. You know, like, why did I have to meet this person? Who now, you know, we have this breakup because of running, like, and this stupid race I have. You know, I've, like, it's infiltrated every single crevice of my life. And I can't thank the activity enough. And obviously with the activity comes a community. You know, I probably wouldn't be talking to both of you, Addie and Faith, right now, if it weren't for running. And so, like, when I say the activity running, yes, but it's also this community, and it's such an accessible sport. Like, running is simple on the whole. You know, once you get into ultra running, it gets a little more complex with logistics and the time you need. So ultra running, the community, it's not quite as, like, socioeconomically diverse as I would love to see it, just because, like, the sheer number of hours you need to devote to training and, you know, like, paying for races and stuff. But on the whole, running is, you know, it's, like, as good as it gets.
On access, like, the access piece for a second, sounded like you were really leaning on Chrissy Mayle's book and, like, maybe some other running knowledge you'd had from your high school and college years. But, like, I've always thought, like, yeah, it's just a pair of running shoes. And then, like, and then I'm realizing, like, but ultra running specifically, yes, trail access, like, physical access is one piece, but it's also, like, the more we talk about it, I'm realizing, like, there is a community component that's very, very positive. And I love the community. Obviously, I've met both of you through that. And it's also, like, I wonder what that feels like to not be in that community and to kind of needing to be seeking access there.
I think, yeah, it should be stated that ultra running doesn't require just a pair of shoes. It requires, like, some way to hold your water. So whether that's a, you know, $150 hydration pack, it requires food. So you might be buying gels, which costs like $2 a piece, you know, like, clothing that is comfortable. Like, that's oftentimes, like, a lot of high tech running apparel. And then if you want to race, you know, there's the race registration fees, there's travel to and from races. So that's, like, the financial component, right? But then you also have the social component of, like, well, one, where do you live? And is there a trail running or ultra running group in your area? Most cities, areas in the US, probably not, like, unfortunately. And I think ultra running is one of those sports where you really do want a community. Like, a lot of this stuff is kind of stupid. Like, why would you run 100 miles? Like, why? Like, who came up with this dumb idea? And especially in terms of, like, just the race component, I get that there are indigenous cultures that have used ultra running through spiritual means. But the way I run, I do find it spiritual, but it's not part of my cultural identity in the same way. The reality is I'm running for myself. I'm running races to compete. I absolutely love it, but I definitely rely on these people around me who think that these ideas are also good ideas. Going back to your question, Addie, I think a lot of allowing someone to feel comfortable, like, how do I get into this scene? How do I meet these people? The first step is showing up. And I'm fortunate that I don't have any problems showing up. Just, it's my personality. It's easy for me to show up into groups. Often the groups, it's people who look like me. And I've thought a lot about the trail running groups I run with, whether it's in Boulder or other places. What are we doing to make sure that people feel comfortable here?
Yeah, I feel like this conversation, like, I have so many thoughts. I still, and this is going to sound like such a strange statement probably to a lot of people and to our listeners, like, I still feel like I'm on the outs. And I've had, like, a full page spread article in Trail Runner magazine.
You've been on the cover. Me. You've literally been on the cover
of Women's Running.
Women's Running, yeah.
And I still feel on the outs. I still show up to groups and I feel uncomfortable. And I've shown up to trail runs before and like literally had a panic attack, like crying in the back of this thing and trying to get myself together. I struggle to show up to things, even though I'm like, I'm a gregarious, I'm an extrovert. Like I am a person who can like show up. And I still think that for whatever reason, like the act of running, it is so freeing and also so vulnerable. I think I'll say one thing. So after college, like I started running on my own. Then I found out about different running groups around the world. And one of the things that was always really helpful was pace groups. I think with trail, there are so many elements that it's really hard to know what you're getting yourself into. And when it's a big group and you don't know who's going to go at what speed, and maybe you don't know like how long the actual thing is going to be, and options that are just like, we've got this group, and this group. And I see that so much with urban run crews where like there's a walk group, there's a group that calls themselves the cruisers, there's a group that calls themselves, you know, I've been to Charlottesville and New York and LA where they're like, yeah, my grandma comes out and she does the walking group and I go with the like medium group, you know, and people know exactly what their experience is going to be and they feel in control and they don't feel that they're putting themselves into an uncomfortable position. And I think that when you walk through life every day, feeling like you have to put yourself into uncomfortable positions and that maybe those positions aren't safe or maybe you're going to be shamed or embarrassed, you don't want to do that with your free time.
I won't lie. Like it bums me out to know that you've had those experiences at group runs. The best parts of trail running, I believe, are the fact that you can do whatever you want. In my opinion, no one really cares. And I know that's sort of an opposite mentality of where you're coming from, Faith, in some ways. And it's taken me a long time to get there. And I know it's like comes with an asterisk since I've had a lot of like success in this sport and by the traditional, you know, means of how we say success. But if we scratch all of that out and we go running on a trail, whether it's Central Park, you know, in Omaha or in Boulder, like you can do whatever you want.
Yeah. And I'll say the other side of my experience too is a community that's just been like, you want to come run trails? Oh my God, please come. Like, we're so excited. Like the idea that there's like another weirdo out there trying to like, you know, put like peanut like butter on potato chips. They're like, yes, like, let's go.
Right.
I was doing an interview with Rory Bosio and she was like, I believe that if we all run, we'll be better humans. Like, I believe that. And it was like, I do too. Like, I believe that. And it's not that we like think everyone should be running all the time, whatever, but it's interesting just to be like, what does being in relationship with your body do for like yourself and the world? What does that do for like compassion? What does that do for vulnerability?
Yeah, I'd agree with it too. And especially in the chance there are listeners who have felt intimidated at the thought of starting running. And I'm talking like 1 mile. You know, 1 mile is totally worth it. If you get out for 5 minutes, that counts. Like everyone can decide what running means to them. Whether you listen to music, great. Whether you want silence, great. Whether you want 25 other humans talking around you, great. Like seek that out. And I see running as a way, especially if you go down the route of ultras or these longer, you know, somewhat ridiculous races, there's a lot of self-introspection. And I find it almost the closest I'm able to in my everyday life of sort of tickling this question that gnaws at me is just like, what's the point? Like, not what's the point of running this race, but like,
of life.
Dude, why are we here? Yeah. Like, not to get too meta about it, but like, I'm not religious, period. And I so I ask myself, you know, there's a ton of unknown in my life that I've chosen by consciously not being religious. And in a way, when I get into these like really strange, sometimes euphoric, sometimes dark places in a long run, I'm able to kind of be okay with not knowing.
We're so excited to talk about this super cool partnership.
Merrill has teamed up with Big Brothers Big Sisters to address two topics we care a ton about: being outside and increasing access to outdoor spaces, specifically for youth.
Big Brothers Big Sisters creates life-changing connections for young people in the United States and Canada, and for mentors too.
The goal of the partnership is to break down the barriers youth face and offer additional outdoor activities for bigs and littles to enjoy together.
Merrill will provide shoes and gear, and the partnership will bring more awareness and increase equity for all youth who may not have adequate access to nature, natural parks, or public trails.
To learn more and find additional resources, visit merrill.com/BBBS. On the topic of our partners for this podcast being rad, we want to talk about all the cool stuff Patagonia does through Patagonia Action Works.
Patagonia recently launched Skills for Action, a campaign designed to help you use your unique skills to match the needs of local nonprofits.
If you haven't heard of it, check it out. From logo design to website work to volunteer farm shifts and so much more, they make it easy to find a place to show up to do good.
You can find information about organizations in your area that are working at the intersection of environment, justice, and climate.
And get matched with a grassroots environmental group looking for your particular brand of genius.
Learn more and get involved at patagonia.com/volunteer. Hey, listeners, fun fact. This week, our partners at Trail Butter want you to experience the yum that is their product. Addie and I are huge fans. Our favorite is the maple sea salt almond butter. Try it out with a 20% discount for any purchase over $20 by going on their website and entering the promo code TRAILAHEAD. You have combined your running with advocacy, environmental advocacy, like just speaking up and speaking out over the past few years. And how has running been a part of that? Did they feel like they were separate things, being an athlete and being an advocate? Like, how do you feel about those two parts of who you are?
I started running professionally in 2016 after I won the Leadville 100. I was 24 years old. I had recently moved back from Thailand to Colorado, and I landed a contract with the North Face, and I ran with them for a year. And it was in that year I found myself with this platform of like, wow, like, why do people care about this? Like, why are people watching when I race? And I found it strange, uncomfortable. But this was the same fall that Trump was elected. It was the fall of 2016. And I just started to sort of educate myself. I'm like, wait, why is everyone, especially in the environmental world, that's my background. I studied climate change. So I was pretty, had my ears on the ground to the climate world. And I was like, whoa, this is really bad. This one person, this one administration could do what to the future of this planet and humanity and all of the other critters and species that we know and love? And so 2017 was a very pivotal year for me of just honestly doing a ton of personal like research. I'm like, how does a senator get elected? Who is my representative? What are they voting on? How are we able to block some of these executive order rollbacks that the Trump administration is doing? And the only people who can change that are the people in power. And so, yeah, 2017, I just was like started talking about this stuff on my social media. I started doing more in-person work with like Protect Our Winners, which has taught me a ton, this organization, a climate advocacy org, about how to lobby effectively, like how to be strategic with your time. And so I've just been going from there.
I think what's also struck me about your platform and your messaging is how tangible you make the calls to action. And I think that that's something that is not always present on our various platforms or the folks that I follow or just, you know, in general websites or resources I go to try to find, you know, information and then action items I can take. And that's not always there. So what prompted you to go that path?
I'm not trying to influence anyone unless there is a greater purpose or reason. I just frankly am not. I don't think I'm that interesting. Like I'm kind, like I'm not that interesting. I'd rather like just be doing my thing and living my life, like hanging out with my cats. But meanwhile, yes, I have this like small little platform in this niche world of ultra running, and everything is about a specific action. For example, we have this infrastructure bill. So I will be asking specifically in the state of Colorado, people give Senator John Hickenlooper's office a call and to say, please, please support this and support these elements of it. That's like kind of how democracy works, right? Like we need people to be calling our representatives so that they make the decisions we want them to make. So that'll be a specific. I'm not stoked about the bill, but it's got to get done. Like we need that versus nothing. And then with like public lands asks, those are sometimes a little bit simpler. Like I recently have been advocating for the Boundary Waters because there's a proposed copper mine on the boundary of the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness, which is in northern Minnesota, most visited wilderness area in the US. And yeah, there's this like gnarly copper mine. I mean, I laugh because it's like great place to put a copper mine in one of the few freshwater ecosystems left in North America that's untainted. And copper mines are notorious for leakage. It's gonna spill. It's not if, it's when. So anyways, there's a bill in the House of Representatives. So we're talking DC federal level that we need to pass this year. So there's an ask to go on savetheboundarywaters.org, send a small paragraph to your representative. They do all of the internet things for you. So all you have to do is put in your name, your zip code. You could write a personal message. You can use the message that's already written. And I know some listeners are probably rolling their eyes like, oh, that's clicktivism. But the reality is these small actions have been proven to help things get over the finish line. Like the Boundary Waters is not in Colorado, but if my representative, Joe Neguse, gets 25 emails from some random people like me and my friends about like, please vote to protect the Boundary Waters area by retiring these mineral leases, they might like look into that vote and make sure they're voting the way that like they should be and what do their constituents think about it. So yeah, those are some examples of specific asks that I am actually grateful for social media to be a conduit to get these calls to actions out to people. Now, when we like dabble into more complicated topics of intersectionality and environmental justice, like I'll be honest, like I'm not the ultimate expert on that. I came at environmental activism from more of like an ecological background. That's what I honed in on. And now I'm like expanding, talking to people like you, watching This Land, listening to your podcast. Like, yeah. And so I've just been going from there.
I want to talk a little bit about whiteness, you know, like Claire, as a white woman, in your experience of getting more into conversations around environmental justice, of traveling, of like standing with Indigenous relatives on conversations about sovereignty and things like that. Like, how has your own whiteness shown up, got in the way, been uncomfortable, like caused you to feel like you were making mistakes? Has there been guilt? Like, how have you just navigated all of that?
To be perfectly honest, I don't think I ever understood my whiteness until probably in the last year. I'm 29 years old, and I just honestly, I bow down to the Black Lives Matter movement and the environmental justice movement that has completely opened my eyes to other people's experiences that in the past I might have think, oh, I've read a book, I've read a study, I've seen a movie, I've traveled all over the world through running and through coral reef research. I think I know maybe what like other people who don't look like me experience. And the reality is no, like we need more education. I need to be quiet more and listen and ingest more information by people who have completely different experiences from me. I feel very humbled to now be aware that like one, I have to own my whiteness because I am white and I don't feel that my whiteness is a bad thing. I think maybe there's been times where I've wondered, how am I supposed to feel now that I'm sort of accepting my body, my family history, my personhood for what it is? And so I've gone through like this interesting personal journey of the last year of wondering like where my family came from. And I know like no one might not care. Like, all right, white girl from Colorado, like we don't care. But I personally feel like asking these questions has been important for my journey when I'm hearing about where other people have come from or where a lot of African Americans might not know where their history comes from and how painful that is and how unfair that is, because I'm very fortunate. I know half of my family came over to America during the Irish potato famine. Like my name's Claire Gallagher. I'm very Irish. And I've started to learn that like, because my family is white, they got extra help just through this fucked up racial class system of America that people who aren't white didn't get. And that's not fair. And I'm accepting that. And I'm realizing that like, I have a lot of privilege that is a complete luck, but it's not luck actually. It's built on systemic racism. And that's just not fair. I accept it. And so what do I do with that? Like, whew. I know that I owe something to the system and make sure it changes so that other people who haven't been so fortunate can have a more equitable future.
Yeah. Whew. Addie, you have thoughts?
Yeah. No, I mean, it's so interesting, Claire, because something that Salema Masakela said to me, I think it's in the podcast, he said, you're able to talk to folks that we can't as a white person. I mean, I got emotional actually when he said that, because it was as if someone was sort of handing me this opportunity or this mandate, like, go do this because this is the change that you can make with the voice that you have, with the identity that you are or the race that you are, being white. And as you said, Claire, like you said it so well, like I'm owning my whiteness. And like, what does that look like moving forward? What actions can I take and what change can I make? And I think that that evolution has occurred for me as well this past year specifically, in the sense of like, okay, I could dwell on how embarrassed or ashamed or guilty I feel. And I mean, don't get me wrong, there's healthy doses of that on certain days for sure. But I have also been very inspired by guests like Salema, who have really described ways in which I think Claire, you and I and other white listeners who want to be allies and co-conspirators, how we can move forward in this and take up our specific ability to have these conversations.
It's very refreshing to be able to have these conversations with you. And like, from my understanding, none of us are going to go like cry in the corner, right?
About it. Yeah.
And feel like our lives are over and like someone called us racist, which like is what happens with fragility, you know? And you learn to like have those conversations and you learn that no one's trying to attack you. And I'm sure at times it feels that way. Like, I've had people be like, oh, you said I was racist. And I'm like, that's absolutely not the words that I used. Like, let's talk about this. But when that's what people hear, it's really hard to keep having the conversation. So I'm really grateful.
That's what they hear and shut down.
Yeah.
You know, if that's the shutting down that happens, then that's conversation over. And that's really hard to combat or to get past.
In a way, I see it as an opportunity. Like a lot of it's really bleak. Like what I've learned, what I've done on my own in the past year, reading Cast was pretty eye-opening for me. I don't know if either of you read that book, but if anyone's like wondering how to get like not super depressed about US history, I recommend something that Faith once told me, probably years ago, Faith. And I think it was along the lines of something like, what does your circle look like? Who are the people you're around? Like whether it's in person every day or who are you following online? What movies are you watching? What podcasts are you listening to? And I probably at the time, I probably was like, dude, what are you talking about? Like I probably had some type of defensive feeling that I didn't share with you. I'm like, what is she saying? I've got great friends. Like my information I'm ingesting, I'm proud of it. And I think in the last year, it's really hit home of like, no. I can expose myself to so many more human experiences. It's not easy necessarily, but it's so, so worth it. People will open your mind, especially those who don't have the same experience as you, who aren't the same, you know, skin color as you.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I've also been thinking a lot recently after reading Rezma Menekin, his book, My Grandmother's Hands, and then listening to other things by him. And he's challenging in the sense that he uses the term white body supremacy instead of the word white supremacy. And I think that's like also really hard for people. And similar, like putting him in conversation with Isabel Wilkerson, who wrote Cast and The Warmth of Other Suns. But one of the things that he talks about is I don't think he used the term psychic violence. That's a term I get from Elizabeth Alexander, but like the psychic violence of that, like white people also have experienced over the years of like being perpetrators of racism or being told like you are the upper hand or you're supposed to treat people this way and those kinds of things. And so I think about like, not only what is the world that like the next generation of young black children, like what world will they inhabit, and the next generation of young white children, like what hate can they potentially be taught? You know, what prejudice can they be taught? What can they be taught and what can they not be taught? Like, how can we teach a very different way of looking at the world and looking at each other? And I think like in that sense, I guess I look at that because it shows that like we are all in this together. If we're concerned about the next generation, like how we all treat each other impacts like the kind of like, you don't like feeling white guilt like now, like, okay, how do you make it so your kids don't have to feel it? Like, what can you do in the world to change that? Pauli Murray has a quote that I don't know perfectly, but it's like, talks about like this racial justice fight is our inheritance, like all of our inheritance. And I think that's really powerful. Of course, it also feels heavy and people don't like to have responsibilities thrust on them. But the idea of like, all of us have inherited this thing and like it's our job to fix it feels less isolating, I think, to think about it that way for me anyway.
That is less isolating, Faith. I appreciate that. Yeah, I do. And it's an opportunity, right? Like, let's put on our shoes and do something. Let's be good people, right? It's just so crazy. And we're all Homo sapiens, right? Like, we all are the same as far as the history of the world and the history of species go. And we have treated each other so, so poorly on so many occasions. Like, whew, Homo sapiens are gnarly species, but we can be better, right? I believe we can.
Thank you, Claire, for your insights, questions about life's purpose, and candid thoughts on whiteness. These are not easy conversations, but as we've said week after week, we think they're conversations we absolutely need to be having. Thanks for being an inspiration to both Faith and myself.
To learn more about Claire and follow her action items on climate and so much more, you can follow her at Claire_Gallagher_runs on Instagram. Make a note, that's Claire, C-L-A-R-E. You might also see her pop up on the Patagonia Trail Running account. Check that out too, as she is indeed a Patagonia Trail Running Ambassador.
The Trail Ahead is created and hosted by us, Faith E. Briggs and Addie Thompson. It's produced by Lentigua Williams & Co. Jen Chien is our editor. Elizabeth Nakano is our producer. Sound design and theme music by Cedric Wilson.
Our podcast art is by Shar Tuiasoa. Check her out on Instagram at Punky Aloha. Special thanks to our amazing teams from Merrill, Adam Kepfer, Lauren King, Will Prey, and from Patagonia, Bianca Bada, Sasha Tennedy, Claire Gallagher, and Whitney Clapper.
Big thanks also to Trail Butter and Outdoorsy. And thanks to our team on the visual side, Tyler Wilkinson-Ray, Fred Goris, and Monica Medellin. Thank you for listening and for spreading the word. Follow The Trail Ahead on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. See you next episode.